championships, 27 SEC titles, 131 first-team All-Americans, 70 postseason appearances, 39 postseason victories. This is Alabama football. And this is Alabama Tradition with Martin Houston and Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
So every Tuesday, we devote 1 hour to Alabama tradition, the past, present, and future, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Mark Houston is normally with me, 1992 national champion winning fullback at the University of Alabama. He's also part of our lineup here on Tide 100.9, mornings beginning at 6 a.m. With Mark Houston. So we do this Alabama tradition. Mark's not going to be with me tonight. But we are going to spend some time with Chris Hummer coming up in just a couple of minutes. 247 Sports national college football analyst. He's been able to parlay several articles that I want to talk about with Chris. We'll also replay an interview that I conducted with Terry Davis, the first wishbone quarterback for the University of Alabama in 1971. And Alabama went from a pro set in 69 and 70 to 6-5 teams. And then they went to the wishbone in 71, started out at USC, and little did they know that Alabama was going to start out on the wishbone. So Terry Davis will replay that interview coming up at 6:30 here in Tuscaloosa. But right now we got a Chris Hummer. You look at 247 Sports, national college football analyst. He's actually out in Arlington, Texas, getting ready to cover the Big 12 media days. It'll start tomorrow and Thursday, and we expect a lot of news coming out of that. And you can follow it, BamaOnline.com is the local website, but 247 Sports, the national website. Chris Hummer, I hope all is well. Welcome into the game in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, are you going to be in Hoover next week, or is this just a one-time appearance for the media days, or will you be there?
That's my media day schedule for now. Our guy Brandon Marcello over at 247 Sports is a little closer to Hoover, so he's handling that one for us.
I got you. What are you expecting when you walk into media days? Because this, you know, after last year's skip, and I know there's some hesitation. It's I know from the SEC perspective, they've been very limited with actually exactly what's going to happen. We're a week away, less than a week away. We don't have a player one that's going to be there. What are you expecting with media days? Is hours away from the Big 12 kind of getting things started?
Well, I mean, the Big 12 media days is usually just a little calmer than SEC, out of my experience. But I do expect it to be a little more sanitized, if that makes sense. Sanitized from probably a literal perspective because of COVID concerns. And also, there's going to be more social distancing between the players, less breakouts. I would imagine there's less media there in general. I know the Big 12 has limited their credentials a little bit, just like the SEC has in some ways. So I don't think it's going to be quite as chaotic. But for me, it's going to be the first time and like 18 months, and at least in a media setting and not a practice setting, I'll be in front of a coach or a player face-to-face. So that'll be a welcome change, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, great point. I mean, it does. And, you know, you have a chance to build relationships. You have a chance to get interviews. I mean, yeah, Zoom is great, but at the end of the day, it's Zoom. It's fun. We still do our job, but I didn't realize how much I'd miss that, you know, being in the front row of Nick Saban's press conference. I get something out of that. What do they say? 70% of communication is nonverbal. You're sitting there watching that. You don't see as much via Zoom.
Absolutely. You get body language. You can get little quips and anecdotes about what's happening around people from a story perspective.
Sure.
And then it's been a long time. Like, the last person I sat down with on a college campus was Kellen Mond, like in March of last year. I was in College Station doing a one-on-one interview with him. So it's been a really long time, and I am very, like, hyped up getting ready to get out there and to kind of see the Big 12 next wave of stars, even if Spencer Rattler's not coming for a while.
Well, yeah, and what was that? What was the reason? Any reason why that Oklahoma's not going to carry their star quarterback?
It's the Lincoln Riley thing. It's really not just a Lincoln Riley thing. It's a coach wanting to give their upperclassmen a spot to shine. There's only two spots available. They're bringing out their kind of senior H-back, who's been with the program for 5 years. Quite a good player, but obviously not Spencer Rattler's kind of fame and quality nationally. So it's a little disappointing to see that. But if you know Lincoln and if you followed him for a while, he said there's been a quarterback battle every year going back to even 2018 when Kyler Murray was going to win the Heisman. He had to win a quarterback battle coming out of fall camp. And I would not be shocked to hear him say the same thing about Spencer Rattler, as ridiculous as that sounds.
It sounds like Nick Saban. It just, I mean, that's the type of verbiage that we generally hear from Coach Saban here in Tuscaloosa. When you look at Big 12 media days, I spent a little time in Austin, Texas. What's Sark going to be able to do there? What do you think?
Yeah, that's my home base. I live in Austin as well, and I think it'll be an interesting first year. I don't think anybody, most rational people around Austin, don't have Big 12 championship expectations. I don't know if the roster is quite there, but if Sark gets things rolling, especially offensively, and it has been a struggle at times under Tom Herman. They ran kind of an antiquated power spread system. Sam Ellinger was running the ball 22 times a game. It's going to look quite a bit different. And if that offense can get rolling, I do think Steve Sarkisian, given kind of the talent baseline on the roster, has a chance to potentially have Texas in the Big 12 championship game. I think if they were going to have like a dream season, that would be kind of the case this year. You go somewhere around 10-2 and you can get to the Big 12 championship game, because they do have enough players on the roster to kind of make that happen. And I think it's just generally optimistic as the sense around here. I think it was a needed change. I think the players are happy with it. Tom Herman could kind of wear on guys. Steve Sarkisian's brought a little bit more of a player-friendly attitude or a more positive daily attitude, and I think that's really made a difference.
Matt Campbell with Iowa State, when you look at Matt Campbell, 9-3 last year. He returns 11 starters, including his quarterback. When you look at Matt Campbell at Iowa State up in Ames, Iowa, what are you expecting for those guys in 2021?
Yeah, I don't know how much your audience probably follows soccer, but there's a term there called a golden generation, when you have just like the right mix of talent at the right time to potentially win a title that you probably couldn't win otherwise, just because your baseline talent level is usually there. And I think Iowa State has that in this moment. As you mentioned, they've got Brock Purdy at quarterback coming back. They have an All-American tight end. They have all of their offensive linemen. They have good skill talent. They have a Heisman contender in Breece Hall. They have one of the best defensive coordinators in the country, with 10 of 11 starters coming back on that side of the ball. It sets up perfectly for Iowa State to potentially make a run this year. And I think it's Big 12 championship or bust for them this year. They almost stole it from Oklahoma last season. I think Brock Purdy got a little turnover prone in the title game, which hurt the Cyclones. But I think Big 12 championship's the expectation there, and they're thinking playoff. Like, this team coming back is really good. There's a reason why they're top six in a lot of these preseason polls.
Chris, this is, I don't know if it's a fair question, but because it's kind of looking into the forecast, and we'll also be deciding if expanding playoffs. I believe September's the next time that we're on a conference call. But let's say that we have a team that's not a part of it, not an Oklahoma, not an Ohio State, not an Alabama, not a Clemson, but just someone out there like an Iowa State. Would that factor in to the expansion of college football playoffs if we have a new face? Because when we were a part of that teleconference a few weeks ago, I know Jack Swarbrick had talked about, well, you got half the country disengaged and not a part of college football playoffs. Let's say that there's an Iowa State that's part of, could they maybe put a roadblock in front of going to 12 and maybe back it down a little bit? Or do you think this is a foregone conclusion that we're going to 12 teams?
I think that train's on the tracks and it's going 100 miles an hour. I don't think there's any stopping it at this point.
Okay.
Now, it's not just about interest. Frankly, like, COVID has done a number on a lot of financials and athletic departments right now. A lot of departments are struggling. They're looking for an additional revenue stream, and expanding the college football playoffs is the safest possible bet to kind of give more to kind of the schools out there, the ADs and the presidents desperate for that extra money. And frankly, like, we can talk all about competition we want. I firmly believe the biggest reason we're going to expand is because of money. And that formula doesn't change if Iowa State or North Carolina gets into the playoff or USC sneaks in out west. Like, there's still going to be expansion, and it's going to come. I don't know how people feel about it. I'm kind of on the fence, but it's happening, and I don't really think there's much that's going to slow that down.
Chris, when we take a look at name, image, and likeness, I go back to one of the articles that you have published here on 247 Sports, speaking with Tennessee's associate athletic director about name, image, and likeness, and kind of understanding the compliance side of things. This one's intriguing when you look at trying to manage all this. You almost have a little empathy for these guys to understand, man, the compliance officers and what these guys are going through.
Yeah, most compliance officials have a tough job anyway. they're kind of at the whim of athletic directors and coaches and players, and they're expected to do something they're asked for at a moment's notice. And it's not that different than other jobs, but this is kind of a 24-hour thing for compliance officials. And this is a bit of a nightmare. Andrew Donovan was the person I talked to, who's actually no longer at Tennessee. He took a job with a kind of a private firm. But he was the president of the National Compliance Association, and he was pointing out that, like, compliance officials, which are tasked with enforcing the rules, have no idea if what rules are going to really be enforced by the NCAA and what the enforcement arm is going to look like from them. So they're kind of just like walking around in the dark and hoping they kind of hit the right part of the wall to kind of get them out of there, because it's completely unknown territory right now. And those compliance officials are kind of just treading water, hoping there's answers soon from the NCAA or Congress in order to get a little clarity on that stuff, because they're in a really tough position.
What do you think is more likely to happen? Do you think they'll get some help? I mean, it's trying to predict what the government's going to do is kind of hard for all of us, but do you feel like that they'll get some help, or are they confident that they'll get at least a look and a consideration?
I think there's certainly going to be a discussion in Congress. I don't know if it's the first priority right now. A lot going on in our country,
sure, as
I think most of us know, but I do think by the fall, there will at least be additional committee hearings and bills brought to the floor. Whether the two parts of the aisle can get together and get a bill that works for both sides is remains in question. But I think most athletic directors out there that I've talked to, and people in compliance departments and the space in general, do expect there will be something from Congress here in the next couple months to kind of alleviate some of the issues that are happening.
Chris, what do you think about Alabama the upcoming season?
I'm really curious to see how it'll go. I have them as my number one overall team in the country, as I'm sure most people do, kind of in our preseason votes. I think that defense should be significantly better. I think Alabama has the best linebacking group in the country by a pretty significant margin. You could make an argument that DB group and that front four are right up there as well, or front three, I'm sorry, with Alabama's scheme, depending on how you view Will Anderson. I think the big question is going to be, how do they replace those weapons outside? John Metchie's job as a number one option is going to be a lot different than it was when he was playing next to Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle. I'm curious if he'll kind of raise his level of play to go with that. They've obviously got some really talented young receivers that are coming through. Can they be ready to go soon? That running back room is going to be good. I have no doubt Bryce Young's going to be good, but it'll be really interesting. I'm very curious to know how that game week three against Florida goes, because I think that'll be telling. If Alabama's good there, they're the heavy national title favorites, in my opinion. So,
how about the Dogs in Athens? What's your expectations 2021?
It's got to be championship or bust, right? Like, given everything
I'm
that's on that roster.
I'm glad you said that. I would hug you if you're here. I've been saying that for, like, it's national championship or bust. It's hard to say that with a team that hasn't won since 80, but I think it is. It's national championship or bust. I've been saying it all for – I'm glad I've met somebody that agrees with me. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Completely agree. I mean, what excuses does Georgia have? They have the quarterback. That's been kind of the issue for the last couple of years. You have a potential first-round pick at quarterback in JT Daniels. George Pickens is hurt, but they don't lack for options at receiver. You have so many running backs in that backfield. You have one of the best offensive lines in college football. Like, the only real question mark in the secondary was, like, how they reload a corner. They added two of our top 10 transfers at 24/7 Sports to the offseason in that position. I just don't think Georgia, with that schedule especially, has any excuses.
Hey, Chris, we'll let you go with that, but do us a favor, man. We need some content coming out of Big 12 Media Days. Ask some questions that maybe get Sark talking about Nick Saban. I mean, those would be good here. I mean, we need some content for the final 3 days of the offseason until we get to Media Days next Monday for it. So maybe you can get Sark talk about Alabama. And, you know, ask him about that comment. He said Tuscaloosa was a boring town. Double down on that one. That might be fun.
Well, to be fair, the rib options in Austin are just as good. And after that, like, I don't know if it's much of a competition. I'm just kidding. Tuscaloosa's great. But, yeah, I get the feeling Sark will get plenty of questions about the Nick Saban experience for sure.
Hey, no doubt. Let me invite people to connect with you. National College football writer Chris Hummer. It is on the Twitter side of things, @Chris_Hummer, available there. 247 Sports, 247 Sports. Locally, it's BamaOnline.com, BamaOnline.com. Chris, thank you for your time. I hope you have a great time there in Arlington, and it will be fun to hear some of the stuff coming out of a live press conference. Thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you. Chris Hummer helping us out, man. That's fun to be able to visit with him. So we'll go back. If you want to jump in, we can do it with Alabama tradition. We'll take maybe one or two phone calls if you want to jump in, and then we'll replay Terry Davis coming up here on Alabama tradition, the past, present, and future of the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Touchdown!
Alabama football countdown clock is driven by Crawford Insurance, Tuscaloosa's low-cost auto insurer. Call 752-6489 for a free quote today.
Roll Tide! Roll Tide!
There are 53 days until Alabama football. You are listening to Alabama Tradition with Martin Houston and Ryan Fowler. Your connection to Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama Athletics on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Well, I got my first truck when I was 3. Drove 100,000 miles on my knees. Hauled marbles and rocks and thought twice before I hauled a Barbie doll bed for the girl next door. She tried to pay me with a kiss and I began to understand there's something women like about a pickup man.
I guess
man.
We're continuing a little twang Tuesday as we continue here in the 6 o'clock hour. We will replay Terry Davis coming up. In our final couple of minutes here, Terry Davis, first wishbone quarterback at the University of Alabama. We've been talking about the first memory of Alabama football, the earliest memory that you can think of. And I got to give credit. The Bryant Museum posted this on their Facebook account about 30 days ago. And I said, hold on, I'm gonna archive that one. That's something I'd like to go back to. So I got to give credit back to the Bryant Museum. Those guys do a terrific job of archiving the University of Alabama. Enjoy talking with Chris Hummer just a couple of minutes ago. 247 Sports, as we move into this conversation, let's go down to Brett. Brett down in Mobile. Brett, good afternoon. You're in the game. I hope all is well.
Yes, sir.
I said Mobile. I'm sorry. I guessed wrong, Brett. My bad.
No. Oh. Oh, wrong one? Or?
No, this is Brett.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Brett all Mobile. Confused. My bad. I thought your voice sounded a little bit different there at the beginning, and I was like, okay, maybe it's not the Brett and Mobile. Okay, it is the Brett and Mobile.
No. Sorry. Long day. I apologize.
Okay. Long day. Okay. You ready to talk a little Alabama Crimson Tide football?
I guess we're getting close to it.
53 again. Days away from Alabama hoisting up starting a championship season.
Let's hope so. I'm looking forward to it. And, of course, the city's building up all around Bryant-Denny. Like, it's going crazy, right, still, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. Condos. Well, yeah, it's that's – I don't know how many games you were able to make it up last year, but, yeah, it's constant building, and right now we're in a crazy just a growth point of Tuscaloosa. The housing market crazy. I think someone told me, I've got a friend of mine that's in real estate. I don't want to quote him, but he told me any given time is always 400 to 600 houses in the market right now. Just to tell you Tuscaloosa growth.
Goodness.
400 Goodness. To 600 houses in the market is for sale.
Wow.
Currently, there's less than 200. So.
We're going to. You know, supposedly Miami's quarterback's already mouthing off.
It's fake. Yeah, he hadn't said a thing. Yeah, that one, and then the Brian Harsin, I'm going to beat Alabama's butt twice in the same year. That one's fake too. I don't know who does this.
It's a meme page,
and somebody shares it, and I'll see people getting so upset and. Listen, I've fallen for it. I fell into that trap sometimes. You see it, and you're like, let me go. No.
If it says CFTTN or College Football Trash Talk Network, it's a meme page.
Is it? Okay. Well, I guess I'm not a member of the meme group.
I'm not either.
I guess but
I see
that's
it.
That's what circulates.
When Orgeron did his thing 2 years ago, he kind of paid the price, didn't he?
Well, now his was real, right? I mean, his was real.
Wasn't fake.
Yeah. And then, now hold on. Who was the comment? There was real, it was one real comment. It was Jimbo Fisher aggravating Alabama's Nick Saban, saying, I'm gonna beat that butt, or what was it? Yeah. That one was real.
In golf.
Well, yeah. Saban goes, what, in golf? Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, no, I think he was talking about football, but Saban tried to twist it, and he was quick on his feet. But anyway, it's fun. It's fun. I mean, But hey, it's as Steve Spurrier said, it's talking season. But hey, Brent, I've only got a couple of minutes. Let me ask you, earliest moment of Alabama football. What's the earliest that you can remember?
Oh goodness, you mean crying after the 73 Sugar Bowl?
That one will work. That one actually came up a couple times. Did you really cry?
I cried.
Really?
Of course, the first football game I ever went to was in touchdown Jesus territory, 76.
Okay.
So I was there for 76. We lost 21-18, unfortunately. But anyway,
nice.
That was. But
so you
anyway,
so you blah, went to blah, South blah. Bend in 76. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. November. Yeah. So that was a first impressionable game, but crying for 73, which I'll never forget. 79 Sugar Bowl, Penn State goal line stand, being there. That was a great moment. So I can mix those three together.
Hey, Brent, right.
I know you got time. Yeah. Hey, I know you got to go. Sorry.
Hey, roll.
Hey, good talk to you. Y'all
roll Tide. Thank you. Brent down in Mobile, we appreciate him. Pat, I got about 60 seconds. It's all yours.
Hey, man. LSU 1971. They were parts of LSU all over the field that day. A fellow by the name of Johnny Musay was running left, and I guess it's kind of like student body left, student body right. What do you think?
Not too bad. What an endurance player when you look
And Terry Davis had a very good game in that ball game, too.
And we will replay that interview coming up in just a couple of seconds. Where you been, Pat?
I've been making oatmeal cookies. I'm going to see.
For the last 2 weeks? My heavens. That's just.
Hey, man, I'm going to see my rebel girlfriend. And I've been wearing it. They have skinned baby back ribs. You know, hey.
Why can you not find you an Alabama girlfriend? It was an Auburn girlfriend. Now it's an Ole Miss girlfriend.
An LSU girlfriend. I mean, hey, but this one's really, really cute. I mean, hey, the next time I see you, I'll send you a picture.
Okay, okay, yeah.
Hey, you'll see why I'm spending on that.
I got
anyway,
you.
Hey, have a blessed day. Can't wait to hear you.
Thank you, Pat. We will re-archive that coming up in just a couple of minutes. It's Alabama tradition. It's the past, present, and future of the Alabama Crimson Tide.
A bucket of rust or a brand new machine. Once around the block and you'll know what I mean. Set my truck on fire and roll it down a hill, and I still wouldn't trade it for a couldn't be built. I got an 8-foot bed that never has to be made. You know, if it weren't for trucks, we wouldn't have tailgates. I met all my wives, and traffic jams are just something women like about a pickup man. Yeah, there's something women like about a pickup
man. Hot! It's also you having a little fun! Have some fun!
Talking Alabama Crimson Tide football on Alabama Tradition with Martin Houston and Ryan Fowler in Tuscaloosa on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm.
Right now, let's go to Terry Davis. He was the first wishbone quarterback at the University of Alabama, and it's an absolute honor to be able to welcome him back to Tuscaloosa. Terry Davis, welcome back to T-Town, sir. I hope you're having a great day.
Thank you. I am. Just finished a round of golf, so everything's good.
Absolutely. Well, how did you play? That's the most biggest question for you.
Not so badly. 78, pretty good for an old fella, so not too bad. Won a few dollars, but everything's good.
I got you. Well, it is an absolute honor to be able to talk with you and talk about the wishbone, but I'm curious, when you think about, when I say wishbone formation, what's the first thing that pops in your head about that formation for you as a quarterback?
Well, probably just the pressure it puts on the defense, being able to make some decisions out on the corner, and you got options. You know, that's why you run it. You got the fullback option, you got the pitch option, and you got the quarterback keep option. So it's it puts a lot of pressure on a defense. But when you had the personnel that we had with the linemen, Hannah and Jim Croft, Buddy Brown, Steve Sprayberry, Jack White, we had a fantastic offensive line. And you throw in Lusso and Wilbur Jackson, Joe LeBoux, Ellis Beck, Steve Shea, his running backs. You understand why Coach Bryant made his decision. Yeah, I mean, we were loaded and some being able to run the football. And as everybody knows, we went a couple of years in trying to throw the ball and win and couldn't win consistently. So a change was needed. And I think based on what he saw on the personnel-wise, he made a great decision.
Terry, when you look back, and I want you to walk me through, and I don't remember the era. I have to depend on people like you to connect us. I was born in 78, so I have to depend on everybody to help me understand history. But my understanding is it's 3-4 weeks out when they made the decision that they were going to the wishbone. Can you remember the first time that you heard about, hey, we're switching formations, we're going this direction, and can you walk us through what that was like?
Absolutely. We just come off a 6-5 season. We went through spring training running the same offense, the same pro set offense. Not a lot of happy people in Alabama at the time. Coach Bryant wasn't happy. Of course, players weren't happy because we weren't winning. So we reported for fall practice, assuming that we're going to be running the same offense. And we didn't know anything about the change until the first meeting we had with Coach Bryant. He walked in and immediately said, we're going to sink or swim with a wishbone. And from there, there was no discussion about it. Coach Mal Moore was the quarterback coach. He took the quarterbacks. I think there was 5 or 6 of us at the time, and we went down to the lower gym, and we immediately started working on the mechanics, the footwork, and so forth. So it was a surprise to everybody but the coaches at that point. And I was optimistic at that point. I thought it was a good offense for me, basically, because what we ran in high school, we ran a lot of rollout option stuff, running pass on the corner. So I knew I could do that. So I was looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, that was my next question, is recruiting into a pro set and then going to the wishbone. I mean, I was going to ask you if there was there any disgruntledness on the team going a different direction, but I guess you've answered my question.
No, not at all. I think everybody, you know, you're expected to win in Alabama. Everybody wanted to win, and having not won like we should win in the past 2 years, I think everybody welcomed the change. And, again, with the personnel we had, I think the only maybe disappointed, and they didn't show it, and they were certainly team players, were the wide receivers. You know, we had David Bailey and Wayne Wheeler, two guys that could catch the football. I believe Bailey caught something like 80-something passes the year before. And now he's going to be in an offense where I think we threw 66 passes the first year in the offense. But he was a team player, and he gave it all he had on every play. And the few passes we did get to him, I think, helped soothe his feelings a little bit. But he was a team player in Wheeler. So I think from that standpoint, if you had some pro aspirations, then you say, gosh, we're going to the wishbone, and this is going to hurt me. They never showed it. They played well. They made the catches when they had to, and they blocked when they had to. So it turned out to be a great thing for all of us.
Now, I've been told a little secret here that, and I know Steve. Steve is a guy, when he's in Tuscaloosa, we always look each other up, and he'll text me and say, hey, you want to go get some Dreamland barbecue? And I pick his brain quite a bit, Steve Bishalia, and always fun to be able to talk with Steve. But my understanding is you guys might have got into a little something somewhere during a summer. Is there any truth to that?
What summer?
Well,
summer of what? And, Steve and I ran together a lot during, he was from California and came in and not knowing a lot of people. And I became friends with him. And in fact, I took him to Louisiana with me on
that's where I was trips. Going. That's where I was going. I think there was something back there in Bogalusa.
Yeah, we went to Bogalusa. I took him home with me, and we ended up in New Orleans on a bunch of occasions. So we had a real big time. His family was in the wine business, and he'd go home, and when he came back, he'd have a suitcase full of wine that he brought back for us. So we got an education on wine, and he got an education in New Orleans. So it was a great time. But Steve was good buddy.
Well, he's still in the wine business, and he's a professional at it. So he's always talking about it. But when you look back, and I'd love for you to maybe recall a couple of guys that we'd love to ask you about, you know, even during this era of Alabama football, the name Johnny Musso comes up quite often. Can you describe him from your perspective?
Yeah, I can. Johnny, everybody knows Johnny was a fantastic football player, great running back, a great blocker, but he was just, he's a great individual. Very unassuming, very humble guy. You know, you never know that he was as good as he was on the football field, but he was terrific, and everybody knows that. He probably fell for more yards after he was hit than most people run for. You know, he just had a knack for keeping his balance and keep fighting for the next yard, but a terrific guy.
Well, and you think about it, man, I've done a lot of interviews about, you know, Johnny Musso, but he always makes a promise. He said, I'll do an interview as long as you don't ask me about me. I want to talk about my teammates. He must have been the ultimate team guy.
He was, like I said again, you never know, he was a great running back, but just hanging out with him. It was all about everybody else, but he was a fantastic player, and again, a fantastic human being, just a wonderful person.
We're recalling defensive linemen today, and when you look at a guy by the name that maybe doesn't get as much credit as he should, but his name has come up quite a bit today with the callers. Leroy Cook's name comes up quite a bit from a defensive lineman perspective. What do you remember about Leroy Cook's playing days at Alabama?
Well, I was I think Leroy was maybe two or so years behind me. I didn't really play with Leroy. Maybe
Okay, my bad.
That's okay, but obviously he was a fantastic football player. I'd heard that incoming class was coming, and his name came up quite a bit that he was going to be an outstanding football player, but I actually didn't have the opportunity to play with him.
Okay, my apologies. Hey, let me go to Mal Moore because, you know, I know he was on record of talking about, as far as a wishbone quarterback, that you were the best that they've had. Talk about Coach Mal Moore and what he was able to do. You know, we appreciate what he gave to the university. I always like to say it, he believed in Alabama when very few people believed in Alabama, and he went and hired Nick Saban. But I'd love to be able to pay some respect to Coach Mal Moore.
Right. Coach, again, what he contributed to the university over the years probably won't ever be matched. I don't think so. But he was I was fortunate to have a lot of good coaches and going through high school and even junior high along the way. And two people stand out that I think had the most influence on my success. And the first one and probably had the most impact was my high school offensive coach, Tommy Leos. He pushed me and probably had more to do with me being successful. But Coach Moore, absolutely, all of Coach Bryant's coaches, you ask Coach Bryant, people ask him, what he attributed his success to, and he said he just surrounded himself with good people. And that's so true with Mal Moore, Jimmy Sharp, Pat Dye. You know, he had a history of just great coaches. But Coach Moore was one of the hardest-working coaches that I've ever had the privilege to play for. When we started working on the wishbone out on the field, we had different periods, you know, 15 minutes here, 20 minutes there. And most of the time, the quarterback and a fullback were working on the mechanics of the offense. Coach Moore would line up in a defensive tackle position, and he would do the stunts that we were going to see against the defensive tackle for 20 minutes. Now here, and we got three or four quarterbacks running plays. He did that on every play. Then he'd go to the defensive end and give us looks about what the defensive end was going to do. He actually worked harder than we worked on the football field. And he was so intense, he'd get talking and the dribble would come out of his mouth. You know, he'd just be so fired up about it. But a fantastic human being, a great coach. What else can you say about the man, what he contributed to the university?
Well, I'll tell you what, you read his book and you can see the love that he had for this place. And, you know, when he went and hired Coach Nick Saban, we shared that story here on the air, and he was telling us all these different things. And he said, you know, he'd called Namath on the way down to tell him that, hey, I'm going down to hire Nick Saban. And Joe Willie told him, he said, you better have a backup plan. As he would say, Mal, you better have a backup plan. And it was just, you know, he believed in Alabama when very few people did believe in Alabama. And You know, he believed that Alabama could still win, and somewhere he's smiling, looking over this great program, and Coach Saban's been able to build this historic and get us back to national prominence.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the story is he didn't go see Coach Saban right away. He went to see Mrs. Saban. He knew where to start to try to get Nick to come. So he got to know Miss Saban and used her to help him convince Coach Saban to come. So he was pretty crafty.
Is there a game that stands above the rest for you individually? Is there a favorite game that you love sharing a story about?
Well, of course, we won 21 of them, so all of them are special. But the real special, everybody talks about the Southern Cal game, being a big underdog and going out after the previous year, getting beat so bad in Birmingham, going out there and winning that game. And that was the first game I started, so that's extra special. To me, I was scared to death, actually, but everything worked out right. But the LSU game, being from Louisiana, playing in Baton Rouge, and I'd always heard how noisy it is in Baton Rouge to play. And it's a fact, that's the loudest stadium that we played in at the time. It was like in the huddle, I couldn't hear myself talking. It was like, I hope they understand what I'm saying. We were all bunched in together, but I would say, and you just couldn't hear it. So we were able to win the game. But that game, it wasn't a great offensive game for us, but we won 14-7, I believe. And then the next year in Birmingham, I had probably the best game I had offensively was against LSU again. They had Burt Jones, and what can you say about Burt? He's a terrific football player. But we were able to win that game, and I had a good running and passing night that night. So that's probably the biggest game, playing against Pat Sullivan the year he won the Heisman Trophy. It was another game. I had a good game in that one. So those are kind of the highlights for me.
Yeah, I'd love to go back to that USC game. What was the face of the defenders like when you guys roll out there and you go to the wishbone? I mean, could you see it, the face of confusion, looking at what you guys were trying to do?
I think initially they were surprised. Yeah, obviously the way they were trying to line up against us, and I mean, it was just so obvious that they weren't prepared for it. And I remember I saw a picture sometime after the game. I've got the picture actually, that it was a picture taken from the sideline down the line of scrimmage, and just after the snap, I had the ball and was taking a step toward the fullback, and there was nobody else in the picture. I mean, our offensive line had moved them at least 2 to 3 yards off the football. So there's nobody else other than just me and Bishaya in the picture. So I thought that was pretty illustrative of how off guard they were at the time. Of course, they made some adjustments, and we went a little conservative in the second half on offense. The key for the wishbone is to have a good defense, and we certainly had good defenses. To hold that team to 10 points, the way our defense played that night was probably had more to do with us winning the game than the offense did, because we got up 17 to whatever, and our defense was able to hold them off. But yeah, they were surprised. I remember we had a banquet at the end of the year, and John McKay, Coach McKay, was a guest speaker at the banquet, and he made a comment, and he spoke my name. He said, "Terry, how about that defense we played against you in the wishbone?" You know, so he was surprised by it. I think everybody, of course, nobody knew we were doing it, so everybody had to be surprised.
Sure. Well, and I mean, how did you? I mean, I know we're talking about, you know, the 1971, but we're kind of in the frame of mind of 2021. But that's the ultimate secret. I mean, to be able to think about rolling an offense out against a defense and trying to get payback from the previous season, I don't know, it's just a historic story when you look at opening up in the wishbone.
It was, but again, I think when you look at our personnel, I mean, if there was a team that the wishbone offense fit, it was our team because of our offensive linemen and the running backs we had. I mean, we were deep in running backs, we were deep in offensive linemen, and, you know, you got John Hanna, Jim Croft, and Buddy Brown, center guard, and two guards that can block anything out there. It just worked magical, I guess you'd say. I mean, the first
two or three drives, it was like we were playing against our second team back at practice. I mean, they just weren't in position to make the plays on us. So yeah, it's to be able to do that, and I guess the team rated like Southern Cal was at the time was that's very special, no doubt, very special.
I made a promise to one of our callers earlier that I would ask you about the Tennessee game, and I believe that was 1972. A pretty historic game and a very memorable right. for this individual that was talking about it, October right. the 21st, 1972.
Right.
Can you help?
Maybe it wasn't our first big test, but I think we played Georgia earlier in Athens. You know, people kept saying that, you know, maybe we hadn't been tested yet with some of the teams that we'd played prior to that. So we went into Athens and beat Georgia there. And everybody felt that gave us a lot of confidence. But anytime you go to Knoxville, and back in that period anyway, I know now it's not the same, but they had some great defensive teams, and they totally dominated. So there's no question for 57 minutes. It was like they were in the huddle with us. Our offense just wasn't able to do anything. They were in position before we were in position. You know, the thing Coach Bryan preaches all the time, just one play at a time, do your job. And if you do that, everybody does 100% on every play, then things will work out. And we just got the ball back, I guess, around the 40 on the series where we scored the first touchdown. And maybe this has something to do with it. We got in the huddle, and you only had 25 seconds during that period of time to call the play, get the line of scrimmage, and get the play out. So referee puts the ball in play. I walk in the huddle, and John Hammond just looks up and says, "Let's pray." You know, my thought was, "John, you better hurry up because we don't have a lot of time." So evidently he's had a prayer, and we scored in two or three plays and to tie the game. And goodness gracious, you know, we kick off, and then we get the fumble back and score again. Opportunistic opportunity there. It's the fumble from I think Dubose and John Kroll maybe recovered it or somebody, but they played a Haskell standback, probably had one of their best games against us that anybody ever had. He got beat up pretty badly by our defense, but they controlled us for 57 minutes, but you got to play 60 minutes.
Final question, and I may have saved the best for last. You go to 1972, you were captain of that football team along with a guy by the name of John Mitchell. We know the importance, and we always love to preserve history, and John Mitchell served a very important period, breaking some racial barriers here at the University of Alabama. Can you help us honor John Mitchell?
Oh, absolutely. John came in, and right away you knew he was special. He just looked like an athlete. He had the body for it, and a nice person, fit right in. He and Wilbur Jackson, the two that were the first under scholarship, the black athletes for Alabama, and both of them. Wilbur was a lot quieter than John, but John was a terrific person, heck of a defensive end, and contributed a heck of a lot to our success. And then Wilbur came along, and same thing. Wilbur was probably the only quieter guy on the team as far as being shy and that sort of thing was Wilbur than me. I was pretty quiet back in those days myself, but Wilbur was a fantastic player too. So that was the thing. I think Coach Bryant recruited good people as he brought more black players in. You realize right off they were good people, and we didn't have any problems. Everybody just considered it. Everybody was a football player. You know, we're teammates, we're football players, and I don't care what color you are. So it worked out fantastically.
Well, Terry, I'm excited about the Wishbone Boys and the premiere that's going to be happening here later in the month of August, August 28th, the historic Bama Theater here on the campus of the University of Alabama. That's a historic place. It's also where you guys watched a lot of those Friday night films, getting ready for the game, and you think about Bama Theater, and it's going to be nice to have a reunion to be able to salute that 12-year run, to be able to salute what you guys were able to accomplish and started off in 1971 as we talked about the Wishbone. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and it'll be a great reunion with all you guys back in T-Town.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it. And thanks to Tim Card and his guys and all the folks involved in putting it together, because it was a one of the best periods of Alabama football. And I think averaged over 10 games a win for 10 or 12, whatever it was. National championships, SEC championships. It was just, and like you said, you were born in 78, so most of the people you run in today weren't born when we were playing. So maybe their history on the wishbone is not what it should be. So this will give everybody an opportunity, those Alabama fans that weren't around when this thing happened, a chance to really see how it took place and the success that was that we had with it. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Sounds like it's going to be a great weekend.
It is going to be, absolutely. Terry Davis, thank you again for helping us preserve the history of Alabama. It's a lot of fun to be able to visit with you and talk some Alabama Crimson Tide football. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A mixture of clouds and sunshine this afternoon. The chance of scattered showers and storms through the evening hours. Today's high 87, the low tonight 70. Tomorrow, morning sunshine, scattered thunderstorms developing by afternoon. The high at 88. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 77 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The host of the game, Ryan Fowler, and the host of the Martin Houston Show, Martin Houston, have combined to offer a show filled with in-depth analysis of Alabama football and more. Alabama Tradition broadcasts live on Tide 100.9 every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. and is available live and on playback on numerous affiliates around the Southeast. Check out alabamatradition.com for a list of affiliates, as well as other great content.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up, and the stock.
All right, big thanks to Terry Davis, Alabama quarterback, the first wishbone quarterback at the University of Alabama. We always enjoy that conversation. That was heard right here on the game. We'll do it again starting tomorrow, 2 o'clock. Appreciate Alabama Tradition, 6 until 7. Coming up every Tuesday. Remember, Martin Houston wakes you up tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. Wimp and Barry inside the locker room, 7 until 9. Gary Harris, 9 until 11. Jacob Harrison, off the edge, 11 until noon. Jay Barker, Lars Anderson with the Jay Barker Show, 12 until 2. I'll see you guys 2 o'clock tomorrow on the game. We'll see you then.
I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do.